Hello and welcome to Tonebenders, where we talk with the sonic artists behind our favorite films, games, and series. My name is Tim Muirhead, and I will be your host today as we talk about making the sounds of magic and the dark arts. Specifically, we will be looking into the making of the new SFX library from Echo Collective called Conjure, that features all sorts of amazing sounds, from thundering elemental bombast to delicate bell sparkles. Conjure has something for every magic scenario. We have the Echo Collective partners here in the studio with us. They're also owners of Dallas Audio Post. You know one of them from this podcast for many, many years, Renee Coronado. Welcome, as always.
Hey, good to be here.
Good to be here, right?
Again.
And then also Renee's partner, Brad Dale. Brad, it's great to have you on for the first time. This is awesome.
Hey, Tim. Thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it.
So Conjure's this really amazing library. I've spent the early part of the day going through all the different sounds in it. It's really cool. What made you guys decide to make a library about magic sounds?
Yeah, you know, I think what happens many times with many of the Echo Collective libraries, and I'm sure libraries that other professionals conjure up, is just pure need. You know, we find ourselves in spots as sound designers and sound audio post professionals needing certain things and needing a lot of it, whether it be for a specific project or just for day-to-day things that are coming across our plate. So we definitely had a fantasy magic feature in front of me that had all of the things, spell casts and portals and energy blasts and delicate small magical appearances and happenings and all of the things. And we needed great sounds for them. So along with reaching out to the greater sound effects library community and seeing what was out there, I was looking at, you know, okay, well, what are the holes that I also need? And then what can I generate? And then just kind of being inspired by all of that as a general process and aesthetic, and then digging deep into how to go about that effectively ourselves and uniquely and creatively in our own way. And that's kind of how the spawn of this library took place, was needs and then inspiration.
Yeah, the other interesting thing on it was, you know, we do Echo Collective as a subset of what we're doing at Dallas Audio Post, and we were kind of in the process of dreaming up a slightly different library at the beginning, and so we were recording a whole bunch of elements that were more festive and cheery. And then as this need started evolving, we started just, like, adding a bunch of, like, dark whispers and recording, like, you know, friction rubs and that kind of stuff. And it ended up like turning into a whole different thing from where it started from, just based on what our need ended up being like halfway through it.
No, that's very true. In terms of, you know, we were looking at doing something like a festival, even like a holiday kind of sprinkle sparkle type thing, and or with organics and shakers and reeds and the like. We were looking to do something very, you know, on the mic. And then we just allowed ourselves to take that journey and then bring in the cloth and the poof and the bigger cloths and the layers and then the granulations. And then the electric and the energy and things. Definitely was a journey that, you know, happened organically.
So aside from the stuff that you needed for the project that you were working on, like, this is a vast array of different types of sounds. Like, did you just start with like a Word document and just like list all the different kinds of magic you could think of? Like, how did you come up with the ideas for all the different types of sounds that ended up in the library?
Well, there's more than one of us, right? So, you know, we all got sent off into our own rooms and just dreamed up our own magic things. And what would end up happening is we would all have completely different ideas about what was interesting and what was cool. And we were all using different tools. And then Brad, basically as the producer of this, would take all of just the raw source that we were all doing. And we were just putting all kinds of paint on the canvas. And he took a lot of time and just started stripping it back down into things that were good and just getting rid of things that weren't quite over the bar from a quality perspective, or maybe like were a little bit redundant or whatever. And you end up looking at the whole of it and being, man, there's a lot of poofs here. We need some more energy, you know, and just kind of figuring out what your holes are after you've done a whole pass.
We did spend a lot of time on this library because of our bandwidth and just our ability to kind of just explore and let the sound designers, the four of us, just go. One of them, Paolo Guzman, spent a lot of the bulk of the time on the mics. You know, we were using like a Shep's MS configuration and just spent a lot of time on sources, small sources and things, cloth and, you know, cellophane and the types of things that we were just experimenting with process. And then we did kind of all take those sources into our little cubby holes, if you will, and use the various tools that we each use to manipulate. I guess it is worth noting that it is all 99% of the library does come from organic sources. There's like very little. I think I put a few LFE elements that technically come from synthesis for like sub harmonics on some layers, but the vast majority of the library comes from manipulating and layering sounds off the mic, which we felt for fantasy and magic was very on brand in terms of it being organic. And I think once we kind of fell into the conjure theme of this is magic that is derived from something that lives in this organic and otherworldly space, and it's not necessarily synthetic or sci-fi, that helped lead us where we wanted to go. Part of that was kind of when we talked about, well, it started as like a festival sprinkly thing. So the very early stages of what we were doing, it being organic, kind of helped keep it rooted in this conjure world, if you will, as opposed to it being something that's a little bit more like sci-fi and synth generated. And not that that's awesome, it's totally awesome as well, but this was, we tried to keep in the world of hyperreal, I guess.
Yeah, we had conversations early about like it being a kinetic force. And the other thing, Tim, is like we like to put restrictions on certain libraries. We like to kind of create a little box and then get creative within that box. So like we released a library called the Analog Interface, and the entirety of the concept behind that one is like only analog synthesis, like no digital anything, just super fat, just circuits making noises, right? And so for this one, our initial concept was like, this has to be very kinetic type magic, not synthesis type magic. So it's all got to be very, very real sounding. Like people are like moving with force, you know, like telekinesis almost kind of stuff, like as an initial concept. And so that helps us keep the whole library feeling like it's all from the same family, and also just kind of having a unique angle that, you know, if you have a project where like from a story perspective that makes sense, then this stuff is like super, super covering all of what that is.
So let's talk about some of the source material that you were throwing up against the mic. I really found myself drawn to the electric sounds. There's a lot of really cool electricity sounds. In addition to force fields, but actually I mean like the crackling, the sparks of electricity. And then the way the library is set up, there's a designed section of it that has all of the stuff that you guys are talking about when you really went in and designed it and made it hyper real. But then there's also another section where it's all the elements, which is also kind of, it's not just the raw elements. They feel like they've been really treated lovingly as well. But do you want to talk about how you came to all the electrical sounds in it? Maybe start there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as a sound designer, it was just super a lot of fun, right? This types of things. I told someone the other day, it's like, I don't know how I made it this far into my career without doing granulated manipulations of cellophane, because that's just fantastic. and so I spent a lot of time just loving that. Recording a lot of stretching of plastic wrap and cellophane and tape ripping and these types of things that were, you know, and working the mic with them, you know, using proximity effect and things in the mics, you know, while we're rushing it by. And so you're using the air and the microphone proximity effect, but then on these organic materials, even if it's plastic, but real non-synthetic on the mic materials. And then, yes, taking those performances, long performances, kind of editing them, those raws, doing some processing to them, and then pretty key that one of the main tools, and you'll see whenever you see granulated, like in the metadata, I was using a granulator and synth that I found called Novum. And I just kind of searched the market. I have an outboard granular synth. And it's super cool and fun to play with, but it's like mono and 16-bit, and you have to load it up with a chip card. And anyway, so I looked around in the space, like, what can I do at 96K and really get these sounds in there and start doing the types of granular stretching and things I want to do and really retain that information and that authentic data that's being recorded off the microphones. And Novum was super cool. You do have to kind of strip it of a lot of its presets and go in and, you know, obviously load in your own sounds and start from scratch in terms of what you want to do with the sounds, but it was super powerful to take these recorded plastic wrap stretching, ripping, tearing types of things, and then just rip them further with granular synthesis applications. You know, you're taking the raw samples and playing them across how many different cloud-based densities and pitches, variations and things, and performing it, you know, was mapping the various controls to sliders and knobs on a keyboard and then playing layers on the keyboard and playing the big electric lightning bursts and things and manipulating a lot of that stuff in real time, which is a super important part of what's going on in there. But what's also magical about the workflow is that Renee is right over in the other room using a nonlinear application to take the files and do his style of processing on it. And he could probably talk about what that is. And, you know, the strengths of both, I think, are super cool. Or me as a musical background, you know, I love to just get on the keyboard and the controller and the knobs and rip my sounds in real time, where Renee is super powerful at setting up parameters and telling the machine, this is what I want you to do with these sounds. So Renee, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's sound particles is a lot of it. And then also radium inside of SoundMiner as well. It is a lot of like the performance side of it too. Like another thing that happened was, you know, we would pull in just footage, right, from these projects and just look at the footage of the actual magic stuff that was needing to get designed. And we would all pull the same footage and we would all do our own design passes with our own takes on exactly how to do it. And even if like this particular portal or this particular spell was only happening one or two times, we'd sit there and just loop it, you know, and make five or six iterations. And we would all just sit there and just bang out a whole bunch of different, like highly designed interpretations of whatever it is we were looking at. And it was really, really cool to have all of this visual inspiration to allow you as a designer to sit there and just perform something or really stack and layer something and just make it exactly how you want it to be. It ends up telling a story a little bit on the design side that I think it comes across even in other contexts. You know, like I found like when we're doing like music supervision sometimes, finding music that was written with lyrics on front of it and then getting just the background tracks from that, those things tend to work better than music that's designed as like background music because it's just got more greater context that you're pulling it out of. And it's a similar concept here.
So it's funny that when you guys were just talking about the granulated ones, is when I pulled up the library, I got it, I loaded it in the SoundMiner and I started listening to the sounds. And the first time I came across the word granulated when just going down the list was the granulated plastic wrap. And like my ears perked up when I started hearing those. They're super cool sounds. And then I went down a little bit further and I came to granulated air moves. And well, oh, these are amazing. So then the next thing I did was just type granular in and just search for only granular. And like, they're all amazing. The granular stuff is super fun. And then there's another word that you guys use a bunch, texture. What are you guys using the word texture to kind of describe in this library?
As designers, we also, you know, love and work with, you know, visual design as well. And so I tend to make a lot of parallels with sound context and visual context. So a texture to me sonically could be like the visual equivalent of like a vector layer that I would see on, you know, a super cool website that's selling those types of visual contents for visual creators. These are things that sound designers were using as layers or as stackable elements or elements that we may be filtering and slicing up further, but they're kind of palette building things. That's, to me, what textures in the sonic landscape are, as kind of palette buildings. I think of them as like, okay, this is my set of colors that I'm going to paint with. I love them all. They complement each other. Or maybe they're drastically different from another. And then I'm going to use them, you know, to design like whatever I'm designing visually with sonics, that maybe I'm juxtaposing them back and forth, or maybe I'm layering them, like I said, or filtering them. But textures to me are sometimes a little bit more long form maybe than like hits or bursts or you know, reveals or spell casts or lightning strikes, short events where textures are not quite pads, but they're amazingly useful sonic long form or medium form layers of sound.
So Brad, when it comes up with texture, is that you and Renee? I'm guessing that you're the one that uses field a lot in the metadata. Is that right?
That's field is Renee.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. So I think those are probably similar. There's a lot of crossover between texture and field, I would imagine. But I think field is a Renee term and texture is a Brad term for sure.
Field is a Renee working in sound particles, making a whole bunch of stuff like appear at the same time and swirl around kind of thing. Like those are my fields. Like, you know, when I did the car drop thing, I did debris fields where I just had all the cars going, you know. The other thing is, like, with textures, though, like, what we ended up with was, again, from a visual perspective, one of the tropes that happens in magic is, like, long spells, right? Like, so in other words, somebody will, like, have some sort of force field that's, like, wrapping around them and, like, freezing their motion or, like, buffing them up or draining them down. Or there's, like, big portals that are just sitting there just constantly swirling and doing all this. So you have to have these long chunks of sound that are consistent without being boring, right? And that's what a lot of the field's elements kind of are for, is for building those longer static magical events that still have to have movement, but can't have any repeating, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. There's some really cool fields in this one, like from percussion instrument fields, like the tambourine field listed.
Yeah.
When I first read that, I was like, well, what? That's just someone shaking a tambourine. And then you listen to it, and it was like, oh, no, that's way more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the nice thing about when you're doing stuff inside of sound particles is it creates things that are beyond what you could edit by hand inside of Pro Tools. Because it's like you're creating hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of events, and they all have randomized, you know, loudness and pitch implementations, and they're also moving in space with Doppler effects on every individual particle. And it's also offline, right? So it's not like real-time pitch manipulation or real-time time manipulation. It's much higher res than that because it's offline. And it just allows you to make some stuff that you can't make by hand. And sometimes it just causes a different context for what's going on. And so you can tell that it's tambourines, but you can also tell that it's like beyond what you could do with a tambourine.
Yeah, and you could put that through, you know, reverbs and stuff like that and make it into something really, really cool. Like almost all the ones with field on them, similar to granular, I felt like, oh, that is a layer that I can like make sing. Like that's something that I can really work with. They're the really cool sounds. And like when I think of a magic library, I don't think of long sounds. I think of what you were saying earlier, bursts, poofs, that kind of thing. But this library has that second dimension that takes you to get through longer moments. And also those sounds, I can see a lot of them being used in completely non-magical contexts.
Yeah, I have been already. I've got the Dallas Stars and we're doing a bunch of playoff stuff right now. And I'm definitely like already, even though there's like no magical things happening on the screen there, it's a bunch of like cybernetic, you know, stuff. Like every so often, it's just like, I need this little like poofy sparkle thing just to cut through. And it's like, I know exactly where to go for that stuff now.
No, it is pretty magical how useful these types of sounds can be outside of just magic. And I think that's pretty important, like just beyond this one library and whatever we do. But what we do as professionals, like whenever I just challenge myself to not just go to the XYZ library, if I'm looking at XYZ, like it's super cool because that's where you'll find like magic. You'll be like, oh my God, I never even thought about putting this sound up against it. But it's really fresh and it's really working and it's creating aesthetic that, you know, is different. And so that's what we should be challenging ourselves to do.
Well, there's always something fun and fresh about, as you guys said, like actual organic sounds being recorded in front of a mic. The field recording Slack that Renee and I don't think you're on that, right, Brad?
I think I'm technically in it, but probably a silent viewer.
But the crowd sources that happened through the field recording Slack, there was a magical-based one like maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I had just bought a computer, and there was the huge, giant pieces of styrofoam that were holding the computer in the packaging. And I was like, this is going to be perfect for the magic. I'm going to like rub these together and everything. And what ended up being the most magical sound was just bashing them together, and it made this weird poofy like impact sound. That was not what I was expecting at all to be using when I put the microphone up and like got those things out. And then that's the thing that ended up working. So I love the idea that this library is all based on things actually being put in front of a microphone and just, as you said, playing with the perspective and everything and just seeing what those props give you. Because often, at least in my experience, what you think you're going to get isn't what you actually get.
Yeah. And it caused a little bit of a challenge, too, because like the default stuff that came off the mic needed a little bit of help on the low end sometimes, right? Because we're sitting here working with all these beautiful like musical instruments, but not necessarily with like things that are like synthetically punching, right? And so we had to go through and consciously grab some pillows and some other things and hit them hard in order to fill what turned out to be a hole at the very beginning of the library as we were working within that restriction, you know?
Yeah, as curator and just pulling in, you know, what I would call like our phase one sounds and then phase two as we would start to manipulate. And, you know, there was a point in there in which it was like, guys, we need more bass. we're thin down low just because of what we've putting into the box so far. And so we just went and adjusted and found things. That's also like when we pulled in a little bit of the Friction Mallet recordings. There's a little bit of that for some LFE elements, and then the deeper cloths and things. And then since we are working at 96, we can manipulate octaves on things, whether it's radium or the other, you know, types of tools that we're using to design. Then, you know, we're definitely paying attention to giving credit to full frequency sounds, make sure things are, you know, we got lots of bass and lots of high frequencies and things. When you're putting something together and you're kind of allowing it to come to you, you have to also have these moments of honesty and be like, okay, this is, now I need to go and steer the ship in a direction based on what has come to me. I keep making comparisons to like musical album creations, you know, where you just allow yourself to go create music. And then when you have a set of songs and things, then you start to think, okay, well, what's the exact story I'm trying to tell? And you start to craft that beyond, you know, just what you've handed yourself. It's a bit of that process. We talk about this internally a lot, too. It's like we try to get the artwork actually going long before we're at the end of the road for the library. And it's usually like a whole host of images and things. So not only are we working with actual spellcast scenes, like Renick discussed, where we're like, all right, let's make a dozen versions of this spellcast right here. It's let's put the artwork up in the space while we're working and work towards that. It's like we love the way this looks and the way our mind wants it to sound. Let's go create that. And if we can do a decent job of that, then we've told a story.
Yeah, and the art went through a path too, because like from a story perspective, we were initially going festive and then we were like, nah, let's do magic. And then it was like, well, let's make it light versus dark, right? And make it maybe like two libraries, like a light magic and a dark magic library. We had all this art up for light versus dark. And then you start getting in there and curating and throwing stuff out and doing other things like that. And you're like, you know what? It's more like this. It needs to sound more purple than blue and red. You know, and you end up making it more purple sounding than the initial like super blue and red kind of vibe. And yeah, the colors of the art like absolutely influenced the sonic decisions that we were all making.
That's really interesting. I never thought about doing it that way. That's smart.
Yeah, no, I say right up until the end where I'm like doing the final mastering, final metadata, and final just like getting my head wrapped around the collection of sounds and looking at it against the art. And I'll just be honest with myself and be like, you know what? I need to go spend another day. Like, what does this illuminating crystal of energy sound like? Let me do some further designs and make sure I've done due diligence to these elements. Because that's once you get through all the elements, you're like, man, I can do more with these elements and do some more design. I mean, the purpose of the designed things in this library, as in a lot of libraries, are kind of like, these are ready to go, like grab them and go and do your thing. But then obviously as sound designers, I can already tell you, Tim, you're like, man, once I got into these granular elements and I'm thinking, oh, this speaks to me. I can use these in my process. I don't need them fully baked, right? But when we're making this the library, you know, I'm like, I'm honest with myself. Have I developed these elements enough into... into more fully developed things. Of course, we can do it forever, but that's the process anyway. You kind of want to just be, you know, be honest with yourself. Okay, yes, I love it. You know, that's the art. We do try to be artists in what we do with this, because we do this for love. And I think that if we do that and we love the sounds, then hopefully others will too, right?
You were asking Tim about like if we had a spreadsheet earlier, and it wasn't as much that as it was. We just walked back into the prop room and grabbed handfuls of things that we thought we could turn into magic. And then that process was just like days of that. And then you go through all the things and you start actually doing the design pass and you realize what's working and what's not. And then you end up going back to the prop room and bringing different stuff out to the mics because like you're realizing that this was a good idea in theory and not so good in practice on certain props and whatever. And then certain props like just yield some magic that you didn't know they could do. And it's just that process over and over and over again until you just got a stack of stuff that's all gold from top to bottom.
So Brad, a couple answers ago, said something along the lines of phase one sounds and phase two sounds. It might not have been phase. I can't remember the exact word you used. How many levels did you go to on that before you decide that you're done?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I do kind of consider them in phases. Certainly with this library, like phase one is like just raw recording elements and experimentation in just on the mic, recordings and manipulations. Phase two is just our first round of exploiting those sounds, like a first wave edit and then a first wave of design and layer, but not so much design with multi-layered stacks or like a purposeful event, so to speak, but like just experimenting with the sounds. That's would be like phase two, I guess, right, Renee?
Yeah.
And then phase three is kind of when we move into designed. That's where we're like, okay, I'm going to make fireballs. Phase one is like paper on the microphone. Phase two is like processing these paper and just getting them, you know, nice and ready to go. And then like phase three is like stacking them in radium with other things and making fire. You know, I'm going to get my pitch curves going and everything. And here's what I'm making. Phase three is that kind of design phase. Even if they're still elements, they're kind of in that phase. And then phase four is even when you're just like stacking, you're doing the next iteration of that to make like maybe something that's visual in front of you. Okay, now I'm actually doing this scene of a big spell cast or whatever, or a big blast, and I'm going to do like six iterations of that. And then I'm going to do a, you know, this layered poof, and I'm going to do six iterations of that. And then even five is when I just kind of go through and master. We do master, I guess, in this, you know, traditional sense, the libraries using, you know, mastering tools, and just want to make sure that we're just giving folks sounds that are just, that are rich and good to go and balanced and have frequency content and not like, you know, if it needs any help with like sharpness or things that, you know, just some piercing that needs to be reduced or those types of things, we do try to make sure we're not just handing everyone the all different types of content and level as well. This library does come in pretty hot. There is some softer stuff in there, or that we've let some transients go. Like some of the more delicate, you know, poofs and things, or, you know, they're maybe a little lower because there's actually some transients up there that I don't want to just smash. And then there's some design stuff that's just coming through where, you know, I'm definitely using ozone and the like to kind of get things up and just big and awesome. So
yeah, the before and after on Brad's mastering pass can be pretty dramatic sometimes because he's looking at the actual frequency response, like overlaid on the EQ. And, you know, anytime when you're doing design work, sometimes frequencies do stack in an unaesthetic way, I'll say. And so that mastering process really goes through and just gets all of those little idiosyncrasies out. The other thing I'll say, like for me personally, like the way that I was viewing like the phase two was, it's a design like within a single prop in a lot of cases. So like, you know, you're talking about that tambourine cloud. To me, that was like when I take a single prop, which is, you know, all the recordings of the tambourine, and then do a sound particles pass, but I'm not adding anything else into sound particles. I'm just doing tambourines going, doing that with the tambourine. And I was doing that with the whisper voices and all that kind of stuff. And the same thing was true when Brad was sitting there in Novum with the granular, taking a single recording of styrofoam or cellophane and doing that granulation. It's still design. And it's still manipulation, but it's not necessarily layered. And so you take that kind of more processed step into the phase three, which is where you're doing more hardcore, like layering and like more pitch map.
Combining elements.
Yeah, you're doing something, you're doing it more with more intent, I guess, because you're trying to cover all the things like to make a specific like spell cast or something like that, as opposed to exploring whatever this one prop can do, you know?
Yeah, that's when you start to head towards that this is a portal or this is what I'm looking at visually, so to speak. Where in phase one and two, you're kind of, we're exploring sounds as sounds, headed towards, obviously, as sound designers, our purpose of making sounds for picture.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thanks for talking to us about this today. It's a really amazing library. People can go to echocollectiveeffects.com, listen to the demo and check it out and have fun with it because it's a really cool library. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, Tim, I really appreciate your time and thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Film Bitters is produced by Timothy Muirhead, Renee Coronado, and Teresa Morrow. Theme music is by Mark Strait. Send your emails to info@tonebenderspodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter via @TheTonebenders and join Tonebenders Podcast on Facebook. Support this podcast. You can use our links when you shop with Amazon or B&H, or leave us a tip. Just go to tonebenderspodcast.com and click the support button. Thanks for listening.
Are you looking for more audio-related podcasts to listen to? Tonebenders is part of the Audio Podcast Alliance, featuring a hand-picked selection of the very best podcasts about sound. Be sure to hear the latest episodes from our friends in the community at audiopodcast.org.